Toy Power Podcast is a free podcast made possible by the support of our awesome Patreon sponsors. Head to toypowerpodcast.com and see how you can help.
Oh yeah, this is power.
Hello and welcome to Toy Power, the podcast where we talk toys and everything pop culture. G'day, it's Trent and it is great to have your company today for episode
93.
This week on Toy Power, we hit up our character spotlight as we take a look at Optimus Prime's lieutenant, Ultra Magnus. We then jump into some fan feedback and round out with a quiz from Ben. Joining me today in the Toy Power studio, we've got Frank.
Well, hoi hoi.
Darren.
Hello, everyone.
And Ben.
G'day, g'day.
And let's jump straight into it with our character spotlight.
It's time for the most powerful character spotlight in the universe, Mountain Punch.
All right, so as Trent led off with, we are talking about Ultra Magnus. We sort of, with these character spotlights, want to try and focus on some of the lesser lights. Everyone knows about Optimus Prime, so let's have a little bit of a look at Ultra Magnus. I'm going to speak to mainly the toy perspective first, and then Ben's going to chime in with some of the comics representations of him. So basically, he is a blue, white, and red recolor of an old Diaclone toy that was known as Powered Convoy, who himself, of course, is famously a remold of the original Battle Convoy, better known as Optimus Prime. Little piece of trivia, there is actually a glaring difference in the original box art of the G1 Ultra Magnus toy. On the front, the T-shaped sort of crest that he has on the box art is white, whereas the toy is, of course, famously blue. It's one of those things that until someone pointed it out to me, you just gloss over. You go, oh, it's Ultra Magnus. And you go, actually, that's a pretty big thing to get wrong. Okay, so basically, he's the white version of Optimus Prime. He's got the cab that plugs into the back that gives him the large shape. Did you know, though, that the actual cab is actually not identical?
No, I didn't.
You didn't know that? No. Oh, that's lucky. In order to facilitate him attaching to the armor, the legs are actually slightly longer, which means if you took the white cab from an Ultra Magnus and a G1 Optimus stood them next to each other, Ultra Magnus is going to be that little shade.
Smidge higher.
Smidge taller, because he's got the long legs.
Just on the fly,
yeah.
How many regular car size characters can fit an Ultra Magnus in the trailer?
Four.
Four?
Oh, well done.
Yep. I remember that.
Five if you stable one on the cab.
Oh, if you're talking mini bots, we were 25.
Yeah. No, I always thought that was cool. He was a practical toy for the original run. Not really much for the more movie-esque, like you put a hot rod and a cup and things like that. They're pushing the boundaries.
Yeah.
But you put the original Prowl, smokescreen,
sideswipe,
they fit nicely.
Yeah, yeah, it was a very, very nice way of interacting with the other toys in the line. The original Diaclone version was actually advertised as having additional modes. This was not something you'll find on the Hasbro packaging. He was advertised as having a catapult launcher mode, which basically used the big long things that the car would actually sit on, sort of swivel 180 almost the other way and sort of point forward. And they were designed to actually have the Diaclone Jet Robo figure sort of sit there and use it as a launch pad. Jet Robo would later go on to be known as Starscream. So if you can picture Starscream using that sort of top part of Ultra Magnus as a bit of a launching ramp that sort of goes up at sort of 45 degrees. There's also an additional mode where the large robot head and that T chest plate actually combine. You might find on some Ultra Magnuses that on the chest plate, on that T thing, it's actually got little wheels underneath because that's meant to act as a little bit of a base and roll along. And
so that came into G1?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, some versions have it, some versions don't.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did not know that.
Yeah, and so the actual head then sort of connects to the top, so it's pointing, basically Ultra Magnus's head would be looking down and the two antenna on the side act as sort of cannons pointing forward on this mode. So some versions will have the little wheels, some versions don't. So if you've got one with wheels, that's one of the harder ones to find, apparently. As was often the case because of going from Japan to the US market, there was a number of running changes for the Hasbro release. They started with the rubber tires, eventually changed to the plastic ones. Paint apps were a little bit different. Famously, the cab, actually the very first runs of Ultra Magnus came with sort of yellow tinted windows, actual little glass windows, or plastic windows, sorry. In later revisions, the windows were just removed completely.
Just unpacking the head, the paint apps on the head and things. So what most versions, I think the later versions were all blue, so very plain, absence of any paint. But then the other ones with the larger head had a beautiful chrome sort of highlighting all the details and things, which is probably what collectors want, because it is a cooler looking head. But then you look at the cab, so the Optimus Prime version of Ultra Magnus, the white cab, and he had little blue accents and things on him, you know, you could put stickers and things on his like to highlight him up, and that was far cooler looking Ultra Magnus version with the paint apps than what most people had, which was lack of paint apps, in my opinion.
Looking very plain, absolutely. Look, in general, once you sort of get past G1, Ultra Magnus effectively becomes a bit of a repaint. Anytime there's a new mold for an Optimus Prime, invariably you'll see a white with sort of like blue and occasionally red highlights being as an Ultra Magnus toy. There are some notable exceptions to this. As early as 2000 in the RID line, he was his own unique mold. That part of the hook of that line was the two combined. I've actually got him sitting up the top of my shelf there. You can see Optimus in the red and Ultra Magnus in the blue on the right, and then they combine to form this ridiculously Japanese style figure with massive sort of shoulder cannons and that sort of thing. It's probably one of my favorites. He had his own mold in the Titanium line, the Transformers Prime Beast Hunters, animated Combiner Wars. He also seems to have acquired a thing where a big sledgehammer is his weapon of choice, in the same way that Starscream sort of became a bit of a sword bot at one point. And he's also getting his own unique mold in the upcoming Cybertron Siege line as well. But the one to shout out for all the Ultra Magnus toys outside of G1 is, of course, the Masterpiece toy. Now, I'm not talking about Masterpiece 02, because that is the white
repaint.
That's
just that white repaint, isn't it?
Exactly right. Yeah. But the, I think it was, I forget what number, in the 20s something or other. But yeah, it's looking straight out of the 86 movie. It can hold, as Ben pointed out earlier, four Masterpiece scaled cars, your Prowl, your Sideswipe, and all these sorts of characters. Includes the opening chest plate. He's got specific hands that are designed specifically for holding the Matrix in that very sort of...
And then specific hands designated to drop the Matrix.
And fall apart, yes. he comes with an alternate face that is sort of like a screaming or yelling face. And so if you wanted to recreate that iconic moment where he's attempting to open the Matrix, you can.
It works out pretty quickly. It doesn't come with instructions, does it? Where are the instructions for this damn Matrix?
So the actual character himself is as Trent alluded to at the start, more or less one of Prime's lieutenants. He was actually sort of in the original lead up to the 1986 movie, was sort of the unofficial leader to basically throw people off the scent that Hot Rod, well, Rodimus Prime, was going to become the leader. If you look at some of the early sort of advertisements in some of those fold-out catalogs, he was, you know, classed as the city commander type role, and he was the bit of the red herring before Rodimus sort of became the unofficial leader.
That's a pretty cool way to market that and make that a twist that you didn't see coming into film. I always thought that.
And it kind of makes sense. You know, he's taking a basically borrowing a large part of the Optimus mold. He's in those very, you think of Western or American colors, the red, white, and blue. And he's a big armored up version of, you know, the previous leader. To me, it kind of makes sense.
I can still remember seeing it for the first time in toy shops at the old Meyer department store in Rundle Mall, which is where the Meyer Center now stands. And me and a friend of mine and my mum and his mum were there, and we both looked at each other and said, a white Optimus Prime. Because we'd never seen it before, and we're just, mind's blown.
Yeah. If you look at the original like tech specs and even the sort of bios that they build out, he was always the reluctant leader. Like he was prefers to be just a soldier rather than the one in charge. And even in the movie, it sort of hinted at, he's like, Prime, I don't want to be the leader. I'm just that guy who, you know, goes where you tell me sort of thing. So it was always a bit of an interesting, for such a big, powerful bot, he was, you know, quite happy to sort of stand on the sidelines.
Definitely. All right, now over to comics. Now, when we sort of start investigating things and doing a bit of research and stuff, it's always interesting when you find something that just blows your mind, right? So for me, it's the top thing that I read. Fun fact, Ultra Magnus did not appear in the Marvel Comics American Transformers comic book series.
Really?
That, yep, true story. So that is mind-boggling. That series went for 54 issues, massive, or something like that, and did not once have Ultra Magnus in it. How bizarre. So, however, its sister title in the UK did feature the character extensively in its own original stories, particularly issues in and around the 100 mark. The American stories made no use of the new cast introduced in the Transformers the movie, and UK writer Simon Furman pounced on the opportunity to use them in his own ways. Whereas all the other movie characters who appeared in the stories, such as Galvatron, Hot Rod, and Cup, appeared via use of time travel, it was Ultra Magnus's present-day self who played a key role in the many of the important UK storylines. Wow. As per the original intent of his character and toy, Magnus was represented as the arch-foe of Galvatron. Very cool indeed. Okay, fast forward to the early 2000s and Ultra Magnus from Dreamwave Productions. Now, I've probably waxed in lyric about Dreamwave Productions comic book line for a few times on the podcast journey, but to me, that is my favorite run of G1 Transformers. So I'm just going to spotlight that because then I get lost in the IDW and so forth and so forth. So Dreamwave Productions 21st century reimagining of the Generation 1 universe took the opportunity to indulge two unique aspects of Ultra Magnus previously reserved to fan speculation. Here he was revealed to be Optimus Prime's brother. What a cool concept.
Yeah.
Really, really big thumbs up to that in the Dreamwave's continuity. And also hinted to be Dion, a childhood friend of Optimus Prime from the animated series due to the name of a strike force he led. In the storyline, 3,000 years ago, Shockwave was the first Transformer to be reactivated and set about restoring the planet and its populace on Cybertron, quietly working towards his own sinister ends, unifying the Autobot and Decepticon factions. He appointed Ultra Magnus as his second in command, who led the attack on the Ark when they traveled to Earth and arrested Optimus Prime and Megatron as war criminals. In reference to the theory that Ultra Magnus was formerly Dion, the name of the team Ultra Magnus led to take the Autobots into custody was Team Dion. So that's where that all rolls up to.
Nice.
So when Optimus Prime then led a rebel attack on Ion, Shockwave turned on Magnus, apparently deactivating him. Ultra Magnus survived, however, and his inner robot. Fan, my brain just exploded when I got that comic book, and on the I think it was one of the incentive comics covers, Ultra Magnus is bursting out of his larger robot self. I was just like, oh, this is just so cool.
Yep.
Like, just cannot promote that enough. That was like, that was fanboy Ben going mental in the comic book store. So that was a huge thing for me. To emerge from his damaged larger form, teaming with Prime to stop Shockwave's plan to use the Matrix to access Vector Sigma. All right, moving forward, Ultra Magnus came away from the encounter with less damage than Prime and soon had his systems repaired. He was seen in his familiar blue outer shell assisting Prowl when the burden of the leadership threatened to become too much for him and headed a mission to one of Cybertron's moons to fortify it against attack. Dreamwave's bankruptcy and subsequent closure, however, meant that any future stories of Ultra Magnus was unfortunately untold.
Yeah, I think in the IDW run, they played on that whole inner robot thing as well, and it was similar, I can't remember the context of it, but Ultra Magnus was damaged and he's like, oh, I need to get to this thing to stop the thing, stop the bad guys, whatever. And you just see, and it's all done with like shadow, so you don't see anything. You see him like, oh, I'm just going to take this shoulder armor off here and this here, and he's making his way down this stairwell, and then the bad guys are about to complete their plan, and then bang, 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 you just see this white Ultra Magnus standing there because he's shed all his armor. He's like, oh, my armor's stuffed, but I can still fight. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, exactly. Nice. So it was a great way to use that same thing.
Yeah.
They didn't want to follow DC down the Batcave Bruce Wayne unrobing sort of sequence.
the Ultra Magnus appendage.
Yeah. Just sounded exactly like that scene from the Batcave. Shedding all the different parts of him.
Oh,
just,
wow.
Just see how ultra he really is.
Yeah, that's why you're called.
They don't call me Magnus for nothing.
Oh, wow. So anybody can speak to any Ultra Magnus stories, whether you had him as a kid or, you know, anything, any tales of Ultra Magnus that don't involve appendages?
For me, I was just blown away that there's an Optimus Prime underneath there.
Yep.
Particularly in the Masterpiece line. Now, and I've never transformed an Ultra Magnus. I have the Ultra Magnus from Masterpiece. It came in bot mode, and I never transformed it. So I just put it up on my shelf in that form. So I've never kind of unveiled the fact that there's an Optimus Prime sculpt underneath there, which I think is really cool.
Just to clarify that, I don't think in MP mode, I don't think you see an Optimus Prime in that form.
Agreed.
I think the cab is part of the larger bot. So it perfectly, for the first time ever, maybe not the first time ever, but for the best time ever, it goes from that one robot to essentially two separate units. So the trailer and the cab, which is done flawlessly. Mm. All other, most other versions have had two separate things. So you've got the Optimus Prime robot, and then you've got the cab, and the cab becomes armor, and then you just slot in Optimus Prime behind because it form fits.
Yes.
Because they couldn't work out how to do the cab and the armor separately.
Yep. Yeah, so I think the Masterpiece is one piece. You don't actually have the two separate, but you don't actually get a white. You can't get a white Optimus out of that.
Oh, okay, interesting. So if you did go back and buy that other MP Optimus reprint paint, you sort of got him then.
Yes.
Okay, that's interesting. I love the design of Magnus. I loved him in the movie. And I think, the Masterpiece version is just a beautiful, chunky-looking, solid-looking figure. And I just think he's beautiful. He's one of my favourite in that Masterpiece line.
Yep.
Yeah, love him. Absolutely. And the fact that he can house the Matrix. And it's actually, I've got my Matrix from my Optimus Prime in Magnus because he's translucent and you can actually see through and see into it, whereas Optimus it's kind of a bit wasted in my opinion. So anyway,
absolutely. Darren,
never had him as a kid. Have a few childhood memories though, including the one I shared earlier at Maya, but I guess for me a big part of him was the film. I think he's really fleshed out in that film. Obviously, you know, we all love the 1986 Transformers movie in this room, but I think he's one of the best fleshed out characters in that film, and I think just that, you know, I don't want to be leader like Frank talked about. I think it's a big part of his character that, you know, he sees himself as whether not being worthy or whether he sees another role for himself. I just think he's very well written, very well formed in that film. So yeah, real highlight.
Yeah, for me, I never had him as a kid, but I had him for a long time in my collection, my G1 collection. Transformers Generation 1 always struggled with the concept of height and everything like that. They could never get that singular proportion correct, which is fine. So Ultra Magnus the toy was just a behemoth, a huge chunky figure, and really stood out on anyone's shelf. I like to have him sort of side, you know, like almost pitting against Galvatron because they are the same height essentially. The first time I saw him as a kid and the playability of putting cars on him and transporting around, I just thought he was one of the coolest Transformers ever. And when I had him in my Generation 1 Transformers collection in the prime peak of it, I had a Ultra Magnus in prime form. It's standing next to the larger Ultra Magnus, so I could show off the nice blue paint applications and the fact that he had his extra gun upside down,
yeah,
you know, all that sort of jazz. I just thought that was just so cool. And to show that, you know, it was almost, once I'd read that Dreamwave comic, I needed to source another Ultra Magnus to have on my shelf, because that was one of the coolest storylines. And it's something that I didn't expect. You know, they didn't have to do. Yep. They could have just done a cool storyline with Ultra Magnus featuring, but the fact they went to that level, it was sort of the first time ever I'd read something like that. So, yeah, booyah.
And does anybody know, just a bit of trivia, who he was voiced by in the 86 movie?
No, I can't.
No, he was voiced by Robert Stack, who you probably remember from Unsolved Mysteries.
Certainly do.
Remember, he was the guy who hosted Unsolved Mysteries.
He gave a lot of people nightmares, didn't he?
He did, because he's got this really sort of creepy type, or just sort of foreboding type voice. So to hear him in this, you know, heroic sort of "I'm trying to be a hero" voice was or setting was quite different. So
he had quite a Hollywood career before Unsolved Mysteries, though. So. Doesn't surprise me that he could take it on a role like that and do it justice.
Yep.
And Frank, that's your Ultra Magnus up there from your childhood, isn't it?
Yes, it is. That's one of my G1 collection. I'd probably say, you know, a good 60% of that is from childhood, and that Ultra Magnus was always one of my favourites. The only part that is missing is one of the shoulder rocket launchers with the white and the red. Apart from that, he is all complete. All the stickers are on there. They haven't peeled. The white isn't any sort of horrible shade of yellow. And yeah, he was always one of my favorites as a kid. I was sort of the one who put this suggestion forward as far as a character spotlight. Yeah, pretty proud of the fact that I've still got him, you know, 99% complete and not broken and all the rest of it. I think, in fairness, the white cab is a little bit beat up, like he's got a few paint chips and stuff here and there.
Nicely hidden.
nicely hidden in the
larger armor.
That's it. So yeah, and just to Ben's point about the scale, like he's pretty much the tallest Autobot I have, stands shoulder to shoulder with Jetfire there, and even sort of looking across the shelf, there's, you know, I've got G1 Devastator and Piranacon, and he's pretty close to them. I think though on my shelf, those guys are actually on a little bit of a riser as well. So
beautiful.
Yeah, he is a big unit, and yeah, one of my favorites.
Awesome.
Nice. Well done, lads. That was a ripper of character spotlight. Got a lot out of that and enjoyed that. So that was very good. We'll move on now to some fan feedback that we had from one of our patrons, Colin Betts. And Colin's not part of our sort of group chat, is he, from what I understand?
You mean on the Patreon chat?
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
I haven't seen Colin pop up, but, you know, welcome, Colin. Great to have you. And great, thanks for posting on the page. I don't know. Frank sort of manages our Patreon page, so I'm not sure what it looks like in there, really.
It's got the standard sort of social features like a wall and stuff, and we put up stuff there occasionally, particularly videos that are exclusive just for our Patreons, sort of behind that thing. But, yeah, there is a thing where people or fans can write in.
Well, we've had some commentary from Colin, so we'll read that out now. But yeah, thanks for taking the time out to write. So he said, "What if someone set up a Patreon community page and no one wrote anything?" Well, no that's us.
Welcome to our world. Yeah. Guilty as charged.
So to prevent that from being the case, I'll take the advantage of the honor of being a contributor to tell you about myself. I'm Colin, a lifelong toy collector and aficionado. I'm primarily a Transformers and Joe fan, but like most collectors, have made space for many other lines like Green Lantern, woohoo, and Moto Classics, Superpowers. Darren gives a big nod. DC Universe Classics, Sectors, Captain Power. Yep, raise the roof for Sectors there. Captain Power, GoBots, Doctor Who, and others. All super solid and very cool lines.
Absolutely.
I'm thankful every day that I do not have the Star Wars collecting gene. And yes, that's right, because that's the black hole of toy collecting, from what I understand. Came upon the lads by chance a little less than a year ago and haven't regretted it. Well, that's good, because I was wondering after our last episode whether Jose had regretted it after his Australian brawl that he dreamed up after listening.
We're giving our listeners nightmares now.
Yeah, that's right. I've been a backer for about a month now. I really like the easy banter between the guys and hearing the joys and challenges facing toy collectors in a smaller English-speaking market like my own. Hello from Canada. Yeah.
Hey.
Hey.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, no, yeah. I appreciate that, Colin. It's interesting of our... Particularly when we look at our Patreon sort of group, we've got people from all around the world. We've got Americans, we've got Europeans, and some few Australians as well. And we now have a Canadian in there as well. So it's great to hear. Thanks for writing, mate. Yeah, and good to hear a little bit about you and what you collect and stuff. So
absolutely, and fantastic that you're enjoying the show.
Yeah, no, wonderful. Very good. All right, we'll, on that note, move on to our next topic.
Riddle me this, riddle me that. Time to start thinking, because the Quizmaster's back.
Okay, so this is a who am I questionnaire, all right? Ooh. So I've written out a little spiel, and hopefully this doesn't turn out to be too hard, but I reckon you guys are pretty darn smart. So, rules. I have a list of 12 things that slowly describes these action figures to you all. You are all playing together and against each other. So all in, all right?
Okay, yep.
If you guess early and are incorrect, you have to then wait until the others have had a guess. Ooh. Before you can guess again, all right?
Right.
So if after 12 hints and still no idea, which hopefully isn't the case, but if this, you may ask further questions, sort of basic questions, not, you know, too hard, obviously. Date and time it was made or whatever. Total of 9 who am I's to go through, jumping between vintage to modern figures. Okay. All right. Of the 12 hints I will read out, each one will include the original release year, which wave of release, who may own the figure among us, right? So I've been very careful about that.
Nice.
And finishing off with manufacturer and toy line franchise it deprives from.
So just to clarify, we're not talking about it. We're not guessing a toy line. We're guessing an individual character.
We're guessing a character.
Okay.
And they're all characters, right? There's a beast right at the end, okay? So they're all characters. You're not going to guess, let's say, the land shark. You know, the land shark is not part of this. It'll be more Skeletor.
Right,
gotcha. Yep.
Okay?
Gotcha. Yep.
All right, let's do this. All right. Number one, who am I? Number one, I was originally released back in 1989. I was part of the second wave of toys. I had a very small, almost flash appearance in the original cartoon series.
Bing. A Stark.
How did you guess?
Wow. You said 89, and that's... I went to Turtles straight away, but far out.
Maybe I made them too easy. I'll quickly... In one of my earlier comic book appearances, I was depicted as a wrestler.
Yeah.
There are some easy and obvious to spot variants in my toy packaging from Mint on Card collectors, because one's got the hat on, one's hat off.
Yep.
One of my weapons is a pistol.
Yeah.
I have a sticker on my back that promotes what toy line I'm from. I'm guaranteed to be in all your collections.
Yeah.
I'm a mutated animal. I have an impressive wingspan. I was produced by Playmates. And I am a part of the TMNT toy line franchise.
Nice.
I am A Stuck, and Trent gets a big bing for that.
Wow.
After only what?
Impressive.
Couple
Two
of questions.
Yeah.
Okay. Hopefully, this is a bit hard.
A Stuck movie marathon came.
Who am I? I was released in 2009. I was based on a featured character from an animated film released in 2010. I was released in a variety of sizes and formats over time. In the film, I play a non-speaking role.
Oh.
This particular mainstream figure did not include any accessories or weapons.
Bing.
Oh, my God.
Snake Eyes from G.I. Joe.
No.
Oh, no. Not a bad guess. No.
Welcome.
Not bad.
Call. All right, Trent and Darren, until the end. I have predominantly lime green skin. On top of my 5 points of articulation, my wings are articulated too. I am guaranteed to be in Trent's collection, maybe Darren's collection, and I certainly have multiples of him. This particular version was released on a standard card back. I am a winged insect that stands on 2 legs. I was produced by Mattel. I am part of the Toy Story 3. Twitch. Yes.
Yes. I thought it was, but I wasn't sure. And I saw what happened for Trent.
This is like ordering the mini-bots.
Yeah.
It all lined up, but you just waited. Waited for the final grip.
One more thing and you would have got it. If you,
if I'd waited.
The non-speaking role that got me. Like, I was almost going to say Deadpool at one point, like 2000, and up, but that might have been a bit early. Anyway.
Okay. All right. Ready?
That was brilliant.
Good Number one. Three. I was originally released back in 1986. I was part of the fifth wave of toys. I only had one cartoon appearance in a single episode. I have a single futuristic weapon that I can hold in two different ways. I have only ever been made twice in plastic form, this original version and a modern update as well.
Ding. I reckon it's Mosquito.
No.
Oh!
No. Hey, was he
Mosquito was Wave 6 and he wasn't animated.
No, he wasn't in the cartoon. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. I got stuck on the futuristic weapon.
Yeah.
Okay, continuing on. I've been made in plastic. Yeah, I was packaged to include a mini comic. I do not have any visible hair. I'm guaranteed to be in all of your collections. I have a basic transformation. I'm the youthful one of the warriors.
Rock on.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well done.
The youthful one? What?
Yeah, because one's older. Yeah, one's the mentor. One's the youthful one.
Ah. And the futuristic weapon. Yes. Yeah.
So I was produced by Mattel. I am part of the Master of the Universe toy line.
It didn't appear in animation at all?
Yes, it did.
Oh, it did. So one episode.
One episode, yeah.
Stone Dar appears in two, but Rock on only appears in nine.
Well done.
I am Rock on.
Nice.
Okay, number four. I was a set of figures released in 2008. I was part of the first wave of toys by this company handling this property for the first time. Whilst I am part of a cartoon series, this is a unique version I've been presented in. I was offered at San Diego Comic-Con in a box set that was vastly different than my retail release. Individual sets include a mini buildable diorama.
Bing. Bing. Oh, I was so going to say
done.
It.
Yeah, well done.
The black and white ones.
So I was essentially the first representation of the version ever released in plastic form. Yeah. Bootlegs of this set have
I'm
been
looking
made
at
numerous
them.
Times.
They're right across the shelf from me.
I'm guaranteed to be in all four of your current collections.
Yes.
Sculpted by the Four Horsemen.
Beautiful.
The second wave of characters didn't get made for many years after. I was produced by NECA. I am part of the Ninja Turtles toy line. I am the NECA Turtles comic book figures.
Did that debuted first at the con? Is that right?
I believe
no,
so.
Are you talking about the
black and white four pack?
No, just the regular ones. And then that one, that set.
Yep. Okay.
The set with the diorama debuted first there.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Good one. Nice.
Number five. All right. I was originally released back in 1991. I was part of the very first wave of toys. I was basically in every episode of the cartoon.
Bucky O'Hare.
No.
Ah.
I have a cape. I have a gun as well as another smaller accessory weapon.
Dr. Killamoff.
Oh, how did you get that?
What?
How did
you get that? How the flip did you do that?
Okay, I needed...
The cape was and the gun was the final...
The cape and gun?
I appeared in every episode.
I needed...
Wow.
I need assistance to breathe. Whilst majority of my hair is black, I have a yellow streak in the middle. I'm guaranteed to be in three out of four of your current collections. I'm very evil. I have four arms. I was produced by Playmates. I'm part of the Toxic Crusaders toy line. I am Dr. Killamoff.
Nice. Darren is killing it.
Good work. Mm.
All right.
Doesn't happen often.
Made him too easy. All right. Who am I? I was released in 2017. I was part of the fifth year of this toy line. I have been made at least four times previously. I have Stan to thank for my creation.
You're saying you're Jimbo.
Oh, how? I was Stan.
Stan Lee.
I went to Standor from Masters, but he was before.
I was just talking about it's like you're Jimbo and Stan Saki today.
Stan was meant to throw you.
Yeah, Stan Lee. Yeah.
So I originate from another series.
Five figures though, yeah.
This modern line, I had variants as well as the San Diego release variant too.
Nice.
I was released on a standard card back. I am definitely in all four of your collections. I am not human. I have two bladed weapons. I was produced by Playmates and I am part of the Nickelodeon Tales of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles toy line franchise. I am Usagi Yojimbo. All right.
Beautiful.
Number seven. I was originally released back in 1984. I was part of the first series of toys. Here's a doer. I was the very first character to be seen on episode one of the cartoon series.
Sugar.
I don't hold a weapon in my hands.
Bumblebee. Bumblebee.
Wheeljack.
Oh, yes.
Wheeljack.
Well done.
Yep.
Yeah,
I don't hold a weapon in my hands, but I do have two firing cannons. I have two detachable wings and four wheels with rubber tires. My mold is based off an older Japanese toy line. I have made many stickers to be applied. I am definitely in Ben's collection, but I may take on other more modern forms in your collections. In the original line, I had a variation of me made in Series 7 that did not transform because he's part of the Action Masters.
Ah, yes.
Good
call.
I am recognizable as being based off the Lancia Stratos Artilia. I was produced by Hasbro. I am part of the G1 Transformers franchise. I am Wheeljack. Nice. Very well done. Amazing. All right. Number 8. I was originally released back in 1984. I was released at the tail end of this toy line's release arc. I'm on the bad guy's side. I came with three accessories. My sculpt betrays my nice white teeth. As far as I'm aware, I have not been reproduced in any modern depictions yet.
Mm-hmm.
I'm limited to the basic 5 points of articulation. I'm the in only one of your toy collections. I do not have a tail. I have a nice array of metallic armor on my sculpt. I was produced by Playmates.
Baron Kaza?
No.
94? 94. Oh,
94. I thought it was 84.
I think you might have said 84.
Oh, sorry.
I've been thrown.
Okay, 94. Released at the tail end. I am bad guy. I have three accessories. My sculpt portrays my nice white teeth. As far as I'm aware, never been reproduced. I am limited to basic 5 points of articulation. I'm in only one of your collections. I do not have a tail. I have a nice array of metallic armor on my sculpt. I was produced by Playmates. I am part of the Ninja Turtles toy line franchise.
94.
I finally got you. And Frank's going to wait. He's through.
Yeah.
I'll open it. Maybe I did say 84. Sorry. Yeah. It's 94. Clean the slate. Go for it, boys.
94, Turtles, armor. Bad guy.
Teeth.
Hasn't been done. Well.
Is it?
Need some intermission music
No, I haven't got it. It's vintage line, right? Well, it's vintage turtles
94,
line.
Yeah, but it predates like Next Mutation because I was thinking it was the dragon, whatever, the bad guy from that. But 94...
No, it's the original line.
It's the original line.
It is very, very tail end, but a unique villain that's never been done before.
It's Shogun Shioti.
Yes.
Shioite. Of course.
Wow. The reason I said no tail is because I thought you'd think Cat, Scratch.
Yes.
Very well done.
That's right.
Well done.
Cool.
Yes. All right, last but not least.
I've got him.
Yeah, you do. You're the only one that has...
Oh, you said one of the collections. Yeah, cool. One.
Yep. Okay, last one. I was originally released back... And this is a beast. So I was originally released in 1983. I was part of the second wave of this toy line. I did not appear in the... I did appear in the cartoon. I am more of a creature than an action figure per se. I wear armor. I was released in a box.
Zoa.
No. I am enrolled with the evil side. I am in all of your collections. I am a repainted toy deprived from an older toy line. I have a built-in...
Painful.
No. I have a built-in action feature.
Mm.
I was produced by Mattel. I am part of the Masters of the Universe toy line
franchise. What year?
1983.
Armor. This is down to me now because you guys have gone.
Oh, I'm gone. Yeah, I'm out.
83.
It was bad guy, do we say?
I am evil.
Evil.
Yeah. I know I'm out, but I know who it is.
Yeah, I know. I'm having an absolute blank. It is Nightstalker.
No. Action feature. He doesn't have an action. All right, open to the room again.
Lanchard.
Yes, Screech.
Oh, of course.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah,
Zor went the wrong way. Yeah.
Guys, you got that too. You smashed it, man. Some of those ones, it's like I'm two things in and Trent's...
Dr. Killamoff is the one that got me. Like, that was ridiculous.
Sagi Yojimbo was
Once you're on the right train and you hear a few, you're like, yep, that's, it's got to be that.
Well, yeah. Seriously, well done. Well done.
Now, how good is that?
That took me longer to make.
Oh, yeah. My goodness. That's hours of work, all those things. Yeah. Now, that was awesome, Ben. That brilliant. Was a really well done, good man. One
that was
to do.
Gold.
Yeah.
We've got a bit of time, so we're going to sneak in a soapbox right now. Let's hit it up.
Let's do that.
The soapbox.
Well,
if you've got something you want to get off your chest and let out, it's therapeutic.
It's kind of ridiculous that I can't do that.
Oh my god, kill me now. Like, it's just the worst.
It's insane.
And I love it.
Yeah, so look, there's been some really big things happening at the moment. And this dates back to a Kickstarter that went live 18 months ago, which is the Mythic Legions 2.0 Advent of Decay. And what this got me thinking about was everyone's starting to get these, so they're shipping out, and a couple of the guys from the My Wife's Gonna Kill Me podcast got these figures. A lot of them on that podcast were getting the figures, and I saw an unboxing, right, where they got all these figures out of the box, just 44 figures out of the big cardboard boxes that they'd come in. And these guys were just blown away. They're just looking at these things, absolutely going, oh my God, look at this. This is beautiful. This is beautiful. This is just amazing. This is just amazing. A couple of days later, they went and did each figure individually on their podcast and went through. And the theme was just, how good are these things? They are better than the prototypes. So this got me thinking. And then this is what I wrote for my soapbox. I said, there is a new king in Toy Town when it comes to the 6-inch collector action figure. Sculpt, paint applications, quantity of accessories, it's all coming up Milhouse or Trumps. And what's more amazing is these guys are doing it without the backing of a major license. They're doing it with their own in-house IP. And I am, of course, talking about Four Horsemen and their Mythic Legions line. As I said, 18 months ago, they put up the Kickstarter for 2.0, and this featured a newly designed interchangeable figure system. And for the first time in Mythic Legions, a female buck. It was a huge success, can't understate that enough, hitting every new stretch goal that the Four Horsemen could come up with, and coming in at funds raised just shy of $1 million. Ooh. Now, after 18 long and impatient months, the figures have begun showing up. I haven't got mine yet, unfortunately, but I, being a international fan,
being
Aussie, yeah, I might be a little bit later. However, I do have some of the other Mythic Legions figures, have opened some up and done a video review, so I do know firsthand about the quality of these figures that they're producing. And the fingers are good too.
Oh, yeah.
Figures on the characters. Yeah. Well, they're not, but they're sculpted beautifully. Now, the unequivocal response I'm seeing, and I talked about The Wife's Gonna Kill Me, but wherever you go on the interwebs, you're getting the same response. How the hell did the figures turn out this good? Paint applications that are better than the frickin' prototypes. Is that even possible? I almost can't imagine that experience today. I'm so prepared for things to go wrong with my figures that I've just lowered my expectations. And I do that so I'm not disappointed or upset or angry. I just lower them. It's fine. I'm happy to do that and set it where I expect things to go wrong. And I just hope the errors, if they're there, are not game changers or these horrific things. Please, please don't have wonky eyes, I say to myself as I remove a figure from the mailer. Please let the paint apps be crisp. Please, I don't want a bobblehead or a bobble figure. Hasbro, Mattel, Super 7 have all had misses in my book. And for me, as someone who rarely opens figures, I'm really not judging necessarily on all those criteria that a lot of other people are. So I consider myself to be like an easier marker.
Yeah.
You know, they don't have to get all those other articulation things right, generally, for me. But Marvel Legends gave me an unpleasant surprise when I opened one of my Jean Greys. I opened her up and had the leg pop off, broken at the thigh cuts, out of the box.
Boop, wow.
Popped out. Yeah, it was.
Were you able to reattach it, or was it actually like snapped?
What I wanted to do with this one was actually change out her head and repackage it. So I swapped off her head for one in a different, I think in the two pack with Cyclops.
Yep.
And then put that back in and put it back in the box. So I just sort of stuck it back in the bubble and it kind of looks fine. Yep. So, but you probably could have got away with just gluing it if you're going to do it loose. Yep. And that's one I bought, you know, I bought that secondhand. So I didn't, not even buying it from a store.
Just on that. So I flicked around a message, a picture message to the guys. It was of the Savage World Thundercats toy line. You know, so they've started showing up in international toy stores and things.
Yep.
And I had a look at it again today just because, you know, I can't wait for these. And you zoom in on Mumra and his arm is down near his legs.
Yep.
It's popped off. It's in the package. Mint on card, in the package, in the store. So, you know.
Wow. Is that just one or like every
number? It's obviously just face value of the, you know, you can only see one of each of the, on the pegs. Yep. But
interesting.
Yeah. And then with Hasbro as well, the 3.75-inch Star Wars line gave us a Jyn Erso, complete with eyes painted above the sculpted eye lines on virtually every figure I saw. Now, that is a figure. Yeah, exactly. That is a figure with an MSRP of $25 Australian. $25 for a 3¾-inch figure that they can't even get that
Her
paint.
Eyes were on her forehead.
Their eyes were on the forehead, yeah.
The paint.
Yep. Super 7 have had their share of well-documented issues, most notably for me, a Fangor that was essentially a wacky wobbler. The joints were so loose over the whole body.
Yep.
And now that is a $35 USD price point. Now, I acknowledge...
It's a faulty figure.
It's a faulty figure.
But having said that, you get a faulty figure in an international fan's hands, it's more expensive to ship it back and get it swapped over than the cost of actually buying the figure. So, more often than not, you just sit on it.
You just sit on it, which is what I did. And look, I put it on a stand. It's on my shelf. You know, I've sort of forgotten about it. But look, that was a quality control issue. Now, Mattel have also put out some pretty subpar likenesses and basic accessories with minimal paint apps in their premium movie and television line. So not saying that they're terrible figures, but for the price point and in comparison with what other companies are doing, I don't think the current figures in that line are up to standard. And don't get me started on the prototype we saw for the poorly proportioned Penguin prototype from Batman Returns. Just that the head was way too small and the body was way too big, as we pointed out on another podcast. You've got sometimes excessively shiny plastic on parts, warped parts, sloppy paint apps, paint smudges. These things are all too common. Look, and I don't want to sound like a negative Nancy, don't get me wrong. There are a lot of big companies getting things right. A lot of the Black Series ML and the face print is sensational. A lot of the Black Series now are just looking absolutely stunning. And for that price point of $20 or $25 US, pretty good. So I try and give a little bit of slack. Now, I just want to talk prices because I think price is a really interesting point in this conversation. So for Marvel Legends in the US, you're paying between $20 to $25, if I'm right there, but 20 has been sort of the benchmark for some time. Talk of some of the more movie accurate things going up to $25. Black Series is in a similar price point, $20. Master of the Universe, $35 US. Now, compare this to an army builder from Mythic Legions. Multiple heads, tons of weapons, $25 US. Now, those don't have a lot of paint apps. They're often one or two tones. The regular figure sits at a price point of $40, so more than a Master of the Universe Classics figure by $5. And deluxe figures hover around the $55. Now, just to do a conversion on price for Australia, here in Australia it's $40 MSRP for Black and Marvel Legends, and I'm talking 60 AUD for a figure, 62 AUD for a Master of the Universe Classics figure. Now, compare that to a Marvel, a Mythic Legions figure coming in at around $55 to $60 AUD. Slightly higher price point granted, but what do you get? Guaranteed paint apps that are coming in better than a prototype, more accessories than you can ever use, a plastic that is so solid, the joint engineering, you barely can see them because they're done so well. These are quality figures. As I recollect receiving my Sorceress figure from Super 7, the face sculpt was okay. It was fine, and I was happy with it. I could have got a lot worse, and I saw people that did get a lot worse. But it was not up to the standard of the prototype. Now I brace for what my Shearer is going to look like. We saw a stunning prototype of that Shearer. There is no way that Super 7 can put out a mass market figure to that quality.
No.
Super 7 are doing it, and they're knocking it out. They're taking the prototypes and they're improving on them, or they're at least meeting the quality with Four Horsemen Mythic Legions. Yep. So, yeah, sorry if I said the wrong thing there. So, it is possible.
What do you think this comes down to? Is it yeah. there's too much, or you're getting there?
I think I'll round it out and then I'll answer that question. Yeah, yeah. But yeah. I think... you know, a necessary reality is that these figures are hand painted in a factory in China. But do our figures have to suffer quality declines from the prototypes? Mythic Legions tells us they don't. It can be done. There is a world out there where toy companies can do it. Now, the proof in Mythic Legions 2.0 comes from the Four Horsemen having the say all the way through and working with the factories in China. Absolute dedication to their craft. Mm. Numerous dealings with the back and forth with China to get it right. It's their product. It's got their mark on it. It's up to their standard, and I don't think they let it go for anything less than that. It is the gold standard, but it does exist, and it's amazing what can be achieved. I'll never leave Mattel or Hasbro or Super 7, because they do something that Mythic Legions and the Four Horsemen can't do or haven't done a lot of, and that is produce characters based on IPs that I love and I'm nostalgic about. So I will forgive them for some misses every so often, as long as they get, 75% of it right most of the time. However, the Four Horsemen have certainly raised the bar. Hats off to the Four Horsemen for their efforts in this space and making a world where a production figure can, in fact, be better than the prototype. So, to my point, Frank, I believe that the Four Horsemen now have been doing this for some time, working on Mythic Legions, working with factories. They've had a number of lines prior to Mythic Legions taking off. They've probably been working on their own IP for about 10 years. I think they've just been able to build up.
Gothropolis.
They even did a bit of the... Captain Power, is it Captain Power?
Yeah.
And then they've done a few, the birds, part of Gothropolis. So I think they've managed to build up a quality. And like I said, with the price analysis, yes, they're more expensive, but they're also a niche thing. They're a niche product line. So, when you weigh in, you go, okay, look, Masters is niche. So you can compare, maybe for that $5 extra,
You're getting the quality product.
Yeah. But for $5 extra, and listening to the My Wife Is Gonna Kill Me podcast, which, hats off to them, they did an amazing podcast of the Advent of Decay series. They're talking about four paint apps on an axe, right? Yeah. That's a weapon. That's nuts. And you got four paint apps. I'm getting a Mattel figure that has no paint apps
on Blade.
Like my Spycor.
Yep. Yep.
Stinkor. Like all his blue armor, a shield, a gun, his gas mask and things, nothing.
Yep.
A quality figure. There's arguments whether his forearms were backwards or not. I don't care. I think that was pretty cool. It still, follows the track marks of his Stinkor lines. That was cool. But to not, that was a A-class figure that could have... Sorry, that was a B-class figure that could have been an A if they just... slapped a different of shade of blue on his shield and things like that.
Yeah.
And then to hear other toy lines are getting four paint apps on a single little tomahawk axe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, what sort of world are we living in here? Yeah. Like, really?
Do you think the extra time taken is what's delivered these results, Trent? I mean, you said about an 18-month window since the Kickstarter went up. That's quite a while. I mean, if you compare that to Super 7, for example, we talk about 12 months and we often think that's a long while. Do you think the extra time has given the Forceman an opportunity to look at the processes in a much more painstaking...
I would say it would have got them maybe that extra bit on the top, but I think most of it is there inbuilt. I think they probably... if you think about what they did 44 figures in that 18 months, which is probably unprecedented with that's something that they would have done. And that's probably part of, and I think they've said they're not going to do these huge offerings like that again.
Yeah. But also just on that, like my Super 7 figures, my Granita Karg and that, it took almost exactly 1 year from the time I ordered it for the time it hit my doorstep, right?
Yep.
So that's not including the times I saw it roll around the cons and say, look what we've got, look what we've got. Mm. So you can't argue 18 months is the time span, because they had my figures for 18 months until they got it to my doorstep.
Yeah.
And now it's taking 18 months for the Four Horsemen to do the same thing. So. Yeah.
I think, and your point, Trent, about them doing it with their own IP and how wildly successful it has been speaks really to the quality of what they're doing. Yeah. And I think also the time when they were working with Mattel and doing Masters and stuff, they've seen how these larger corporations and your quote-unquote more traditional toy manufacturers, how they do things. And there's been lots of evidence to suggest that no, Four Horsemen wanted to do it this way, but Mattel said, no, we're doing it this way. And there was clashes there.
Yeah.
So I think you're right that they now have the ability to say, well, we're in control of it. Here's what we can do. And the results speak for themselves. Yeah. Like these figures, can you imagine if they were to get another license, be it Masters or Turtles or Marvel Legends or whatever it is, if they were to get a recognizable IP and basically have complete control over it,
yeah.
Can you imagine the sort of figures we would get?
In my opinion, there is no safer pair of hands in the toy manufacturing space than these guys. Now, they wouldn't have the capacity, I don't think, to do a mainstream line to that volume. I don't think you can literally play in that space and get that quality over that much. I
think also once you start talking about licenses, you get license holders
interfering and stuff.
Too many cooks.
The only other one I would sort of put close to that category is like your SH Figure Arts type stuff, with as far as the quality, they're doing bigger licenses, but the quality is there in that sort of 6-inch scale.
Their price point is phenomenal, like it's double much what you'd higher, be talking correct. In this space. I'd also probably make a shout out to Boss Fight Studios. I think they've done, again, a smaller, you know, mum and dad sort of based toy manufacturer that picked up Bucky O'Hare, and they do their Vitruvian Hacks as their own in-house IP. They sit more at that 3 3/4 inch scale. But their quality is exemplary, and you hear the same sorts of things in terms of the consistency. Very collector-friendly packaging, beautiful paint apps on the eyes, really neat, really crisp. Again, a $35 US price point, so it is, you know, for the size, pretty expensive. But I just shout out, I think they're getting it right in terms of the quality. I think these little companies probably have, you know, it's theirs, they own it, they want to get it right as much as possible. The other shout out I did want to just make on Ben's point to the paint apps, the four paint apps on the weapon. The other thing they've been able to do is it's an artist's quality of weathering that they've been able to reproduce on these things, that the armor looks really well worn and really well weathered and rusted and all those sorts of things. I don't know how they've done it, but it's artist level quality. Now, I don't think Masters necessarily needs that. It's based on a toy that just had, you know, basic paint apps. But I think to Ben's point, you can always draw out with a bit more detail and a bit more application. You don't have to go to the nth degree of the weathering, because maybe that doesn't fit in with sort of classics, but you certainly...
Gives it tone
and depth. Yeah, you can give tone, you can give depth, you can at least paint Blade Sword so it doesn't look like a cheap thing that's come out of a $10 figure that's just cast in a single plastic.
Yep. Excellent. Well said. Can't disagree with any of that.
Yeah, so I now just have to play the waiting game before I get my advent of Decay. But
so if I understand, you've got a thing of 45 figures coming, is that correct?
Yes, correct.
Wow.
44,
I
think.
That's why it's taken so long. I reckon it's got to clear through.
Well, mine hasn't actually been sent. Oh, so they actually indicated, you know, they put a photo of this warehouse. Now, we're talking $1 million worth of toys, right? And if I'm getting it right, so just to put that in perspective, the $1 million that was raised via the Kickstarter didn't include a thing called the backer-lit, which was basically after the Kickstarter closed, you could go back and add extra figures. Wow. So potentially people doubled their order.
Yeah.
I'm sure, and listening to some of the boys on My Wife Is Gonna Kill Me, as soon as they got another paycheck in, they'd just be like, army build, army build, army build.
Yeah.
Some of those boys spent megabucks.
Yeah,
wow.
So it could have, that factory, because it was Ark of the Covenant stuff. Like, the warehouse was one of these secret government, you know, storage facilities. But it could have been $2 million worth of toys, right? So they just said, look, this is going to be 4 to 6 weeks for us to get these out. So I haven't even... I think they've probably been maybe shipping for two to three weeks at this point.
Yeah, so there were three lads on the My Wife Is Going to Kill Me podcast that were going to get them. Two of them had it. The other one hadn't received his
yet. But his was literally on the way, wasn't it?
Yes. Yeah. So that just sort of gives a... Yeah.
Yeah, so look, I mean, the message there is, look, I'm not trying to badmouth Mattel or Super 7 or Hasbro. I love the products they're putting out, but there is a gold-plated standard out there. And, you know, I guess that's what you want to strive for, guys. Yep. Like, you know.
Get better.
Danny DeVito, you know, you can get those proportions better than this day and age, and I think fans expect it. So on that note, we will wrap this episode of Toy Power. It's been wonderful to have your company with us today. As always, we'd like to make a very special thank you to our patrons that help make Toy Power possible: John Caulfield, Jose Gonzalez, Chris Wisdom, Brett G, Joe Hayes, Colin Betts, Malcolm Hobbs, Does 10, and our newest patron, Davey Damage. We'd like to thank you all for your tremendous support. And we hope to see you around the toy aisles.
And until next time, good journey!
You can find the Toy Power team at all the usual online places. Facebook.com/ToyPowerPodcast. At Toy Power Podcast on both Twitter and Instagram. Or have your say and email us, ToyPowerPodcast@gmail.com. Subscribe to the show on both iTunes and Stitcher. And please leave us a review. Otherwise, we just assume we're awesome.
We are a proud member of the Giant Size Team Up Network. Check out all the awesome shows on this awesome network full of okay people. Want to learn more? Go to GiantSizeTeamUp.com, where you can find us and a whole lot more awesome shows. Well, they're not more awesome than us, but good. Yeah.